Factopia. Factopia. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Innovation Center Danmark, Messecenter Herning og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Næsten 230.000 kroner. Ja, så meget er bitcoin værd i det øjeblik, hvor jeg sidder og taler her. Kursen den kører lidt op og ned, men de sidste par måneder, der er kursen på den elektroniske valuta, den digitale valuta, bitcoin, gået gennem loftet. Tektopia startede året med at tjekke bitcoin-udviklingen hos den danske børs for kryptovaluta Coinify. Og her der kunne Hans-Henrik Hofmeier fortælle, at bitcoins stiger i kurs, fordi de blev generelt mere accepteret som investeringsobjekt, som også investeringsfonde nu sætter deres penge i. Men i øvrigt er der alt for få bitcoins i markedet.
Ja, den står i 35.000 og lidt dollars, og det er meget tæt på de 35.800, som er ligesom toppen indtil videre. Altså prøv at høre, der er slet ikke nok bitcoin i markedet lige nu. Når vi sidder og kigger på exchanges, altså det er faldet med næsten 25% siden august sidste år. Og når jeg siger, hvor mange bitcoins der er på exchanges, så er det de penge, der bliver ført op på en exchange med henblik på at blive solgt på et eller andet tidspunkt. Det er altså skrumpet. Efterhånden som prisen stiger, er det bare skrumpet og skrumpet. Og det vil sige, mens prisen stiger, er der færre og færre, der sælger. Det er jo helt gak-gak.
Ja, det sagde Hans-Henrik Hofmeier her i Tektopia nummer 176, som du kan finde på tektopia.dk eller i din foretrukne podcast-app.
Tektopia.
I dag der tager vi turen til professor Roman Bech, som er leder af The European Blockchain Center på ITU, IT-universitetet på Amager. Se med hans forskerbriller, hvorfor stiger bitcoin så i værdi?
We have seen different waves in the past, driven by different interests and for different reasons. The most recent increase in value in bitcoins is driven by several factors, mainly because the technology is now perceived as mature enough and we have heard enough about bitcoin and the underlying technology, so there is increasing trust in the market that this technology is going to be around for a bit longer. But we also have some macroeconomic factors such as cheap money. Kind of central banks are flooding the market with a lot of money, but we are lacking a lot of investment opportunities. The stock markets are pretty all-time high, overpriced. The real estate market is overheated. So investment companies, professional investment companies, banks are looking actually for alternative investment classes. And increasingly, those investment companies also discovered that Bitcoin, for example, is a viable alternative, as it is also now flanked by an increasing understanding from the regulatory side and more countries preparing the regulation so that kind of digital custodians and the use and trading and storing of Bitcoins is something that is considered possible and in a legal way. So a couple of factors come together. Central banks flooding the market with a lot of money. We don't have a lot of investment opportunities with large interest rates anymore. Bitcoin as a technology has matured and the regulation has improved, or at least we are seeing tendencies that the regulation in different countries are pointing towards having bitcoins accepted as a yet another asset class.
Man kunne jo fristes til at tro, at der er en sammenhæng mellem coronakrisen og lysten til at sætte sine penge i et investeringsobjekt med en meget mulig stor gevinst, men også en stor risiko.
I'm not so sure. I was asked that question before. I would say the corona crisis is not the main driver here. The main driver here for the recent Bitcoin uprise is most likely more Facebook and the Libra Association, and now the kind of renaming of Libra into Diem, where a large number of companies, serious companies, multinational companies, have formed an alliance to support something like a privately issued coin, as well as the strong move of the People's Bank of China to issue crypto yuan as central bank digital currency. Both developments in 2020 have gained momentum, which is most likely more of a driver for Bitcoin and the interest in Bitcoin, because once again, it became clear to the general market that this type of coins, of e-money, I mean, now we have different terms and we can disagree on what is the right one, is becoming accepted and established. I think that had more to do with the uprise than the corona crisis.
Elektronisk kinesisk valuta og Facebooks kryptovaluta Diem, dem vender vi lige tilbage til, for vi skal lige have en faktaboks, der forklarer, hvad Bitcoin egentlig er. Den leverer Lasse Birk Olesen, der er en af stifterne af Coinify, og det gjorde han for ja, snart 3 år siden i en udgave af Techtopia.
Bitcoin er en digital valuta, som ikke bliver udstedt af en centralbank, men i stedet for bliver udstedt af et computernetværk, der består af 10.000 vis af forskellige computere, som kører den samme software, som siger, hvor mange bitcoins skal der udstedes, hvilke regler skal der gælde for transaktioner osv. Så det er simpelthen en decentral digital valuta.
Hvordan skaber man værdien i sådan et netværk? Altså, hvordan ved man, hvor meget en bitcoin er værd?
Det er ren udbud og efterspørgsel. Så man kan sige, at udbudssiden af det er det antal bitcoins, som der udstedes af det her computernetværk. Og der står så skrevet, at PT skal der hver 10. minut udstedes 12 nye bitcoin. Og det kan man så ikke lige lave om på. Og når man så en dag om cirka 100 år når grænsen på 21 millioner bitcoins, så kommer der simpelthen ikke flere. Så der er sådan en hård limit på, hvor mange bitcoins, der kan komme. Efterspørgselssiden af det her spørgsmål er så, hvor meget vil folk gerne købe bitcoins? Så bitcoins bliver handlet på børser, hvor folk siger, at de gerne vil købe bitcoins til en bestemt pris, eller sælge bitcoins til en bestemt pris, og så opstår der en markedskurs, hvor folk mødes, egentlig på samme måde, som der opstår kurser på aktier eller på guld osv., når det handles på børser.
Og nu siger du, der bliver udstedt bitcoins. Hvem er det, der udsteder de her bitcoins? Altså, når der ikke er nogen centralbank, kan alle så i princippet lave en bitcoin eller flere bitcoins?
Det står skrevet i det her software, som kører i computernetværket, at der kun kan udstedes pt. 12 bitcoins per 10. minut. Og hvem bliver det så udstedt til? Jamen, de bliver så udstedt til dem, man kalder minerne. Og minerne er en funktion, som man har oprettet for at verificere transaktioner og for at sikre netværket. Så der skal en vis mængde computerkraft til netværket for at verificere og godkende nye transaktioner. Og det kræver, at folk stiller deres computer til rådighed, og det kræver, at de bruger el og betaler for el for at køre de her computer og for at belønne dem, for at give dem incitament til at gøre det her stykke arbejde. Så bliver de belønnet med de nye bitcoins, der bliver
udstedt.
Der findes i dag 18,5 millioner bitcoins, så vi har et stykke vej endnu, før vi når det totale antal på 21 millioner. Men spørgsmålet er, om bitcoins skal blive ved med at stige i værdi, og det afhænger ifølge Roman Bæk af prisen på elektricitet.
We certainly will see bitcoin still be around for the next 5 to 10 years. We will see an increase in green energy. And we will also see that green energy from time to time is in surplus. Storage capacities are limited, kind of hydraulic power plants or batteries or developing hydrogen are alternatives, or you use this in data centers for all kinds of purposes, including mining. So the energy discussion actually is quite an interesting one, because you could assume that in 10 years we may have something like 100% green energy, and we have a lot of surplus green energy. So the energy argument, while it is still an argument, don't get me wrong, but the energy argument that Bitcoin is burning too much electricity is getting smaller and smaller as we are getting greener and greener in the electricity production. But that is, of course, a bit of a more long-term argument. Many blockchains, in order to avoid high electricity bills, do use different consensus mechanisms. You still need to find a process to agree in a network that this is a valid transaction, that this transaction occurred and that we all agree it occurred. That is the consensus. And in a permissionless environment, that means you and I, we can buy Bitcoins. Nobody, we don't have to ask anyone. We even can run a node to mine it. We don't have to ask for permission. In such a large, loosely coupled, diverse, pseudonymous network, the only way of making sure that we have no interest or only a small interest in cheating is to burn energy in this proof of work mechanism. If we have other ways of incentivizing or punishing misbehaving nodes, then we don't have to use proof of work and thereby don't need a large amount of electricity.
Og her der forlader vi bitcoins for at vende tilbage til EU'en og til Facebooks Diem, der før hed Libra. Lad os starte med Kinas planer om at lave en digital valuta.
So there's a long history actually for the crypto yuan the People's Bank of China is pushing for, and they did this in open daylight for many years. There have been press releases in 2016 and 2017 that the Chinese central bank, the People's Bank of China, is working on a crypto representation of their fiat money, yuan or renminbi. So, and back then, of course, it was meant to make sure that they can track and trace and follow the programmable money, which it is, for different transactions in different provinces and used to dry up fraud and illegal activities. It was for a long time not clear if the People's Bank of China is aiming for what is called a wholesale central bank digital currency, meaning that this is something that is only used among very large companies or to settle interbank balance sheets, or if they are going for what is called a retail central bank digital currency, meaning that you and I can pay with it in shops. Now, last year, it became clear when the People's Bank of China was running two experiments, if you will. They gave in a lottery people crypto yuan. They gave them money in a city, and the only condition was that they have to spend it within 7 days. And all the shops in that city were also ready to accept that crypto yuan, and it was like a large field experiment to see how it works. So clearly, kind of the intention is to also have a fiat currency in a crypto version that is issued by the People's Bank of China for using it in a retail context. Now, clearly, there are strong differences between Bitcoin and a central bank digital currency like the one we just discussed, because it isn't a ledger based. It's not a decentralized currency. It's still something that the central bank is controlling. But the technology, the general acceptance, and the possibilities that have been now became clearer have been illustrated by Bitcoin and the like. So we see central bank digital currency, digital money, as central banks like to say, it became a thing in the light of Bitcoin and the underlying technology, even though central bank digital currency typically is not ledger based, is not decentralized.
I modsætning til Bitcoin, så er EU'en bakket op af den kinesiske centralbank og deres faktiske reserver, og den vil derfor være mere stabil end Bitcoin er.
A digital yuan is very similar to any other fiat currency system. Obviously, fiat money is created by commercial banks. Only a small amount of money in circulation is actually issued by a central bank. But as it is with any fiat money, also with our krone, the value of the money is sort of assured by the central bank, the state, and the cross domestic productivity of the issuing country. So in good old textbook style, if you are studying economics, the value of a national currency is backed by the national cross domestic productivity of the national industry. That is sort of the idea behind. As I said, this is a crypto version of cryptographic coins, which does not require a ledger. You know, a ledger means a decentralized distribution. So it uses the cryptographic elements we are used to or know from other cryptocurrencies that, like Bitcoin, are decentralized, but it's not based on a ledger. So you can also distinguish between account-based and ledger-based. And to my knowledge, what the central bank in China is doing, it's an account-based cryptocurrency that is using technologies we know from Bitcoin, but are fundamentally different because they do not give away control over the currency in the network.
Digitale valutaer eller e-penge er i det hele taget noget, som mange lande studerer intenst, og det er et emne, som jeg vil vende tilbage til en senere udgave af Techtopia. Et diskussionspunkt er blandt andet, at en digital valuta udstedes og styres af landets centralbank, hvilket mildest talt er en udfordring for de kommercielle banker. Desuden er de elektroniske penge programmerbare, fordi de er små stykker software, hvilket også betyder, at man relativt nemt kan følge deres vej gennem samfundet og holde øje med, hvem der har dem og hvad de bliver brugt til. I et overvågningssamfund som det kinesiske er det naturligvis et interessant perspektiv.
As it is programmable money, I mean, you can or color coins, if you will, you can tell the coins what they are, who they are, and in which transactions they are supposed to be used. You can, of course, also track and trace activities. This is a design question. If you design it that way, you know, you don't have necessarily the full features, but you can think of something like to make sure that people pay taxes. You make it mandatory that a crypto yuan is used in a retail payment situation. And the very moment you pay at the counter with your crypto yuan, as this is programmable money, it knows automatically that a certain percentage has to be paid as tax. So you pay your 10 yuan, the retailer gets a percentage of that, and another percentage goes as tax automatically to the government, to the state, if you design a system that way. And here you can already see there's more to cryptocurrencies, especially central bank digital currencies in the retail field than it's different from digital currency, which we have already. You know, it's not just replacing our credit cards. You know, there's more to that can be realized here, which is also the reason why those central banks looking into a central bank digital currency typically focus on wholesale CBDC, as they don't want to take the commercial banks out of the equation, because ultimately, if you have retail central bank or retail central bank digital currency in your wallet, you're bypassing commercial banks, and you essentially have directly an account with a central bank, which is a pretty radical approach in the end, if you think about it.
Techtopia.
Og så skal vi også lige tilbage runde Facebooks kryptovaluta, der oprindeligt hed Libra. For et års tid siden, der lavede jeg en radioudsendelse om Libra med blandt andre Hans Henrik Hofmeier fra Coinify.
The idea behind Libra is that sending money should be as easy and secure as sending a message. Libra will be a global payment system, fully backed by a reserve of cash and highly liquid assets. Now, I believe that this is something that needs to get built, but I get that I'm not the ideal messenger for this right now. You know, we faced a lot of issues over the past few years, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who wish it were anyone but Facebook who were helping to propose this.
Ja, det var Facebooks stifter og direktør Mark Zuckerberg, vi hørte her, hvor han faktisk er i den amerikanske kongres og bliver afhørt, om man så må sige, eller i hvert fald udspurgt, må man nok sige, af det amerikanske finanstilsyn og finansudvalg. Og han er jo selv i tvivl om, hvorvidt han faktisk har troværdigheden til at introducere en global valuta, som han gerne vil. Men hvad er det egentlig, at Libra går ud på? Måske skulle vi starte med dig, Hans Henrik Hofmeier, fordi du har jo, hvad skal man sige, ben i begge lejre, både i kryptovalutaen og har arbejdet for det mere etablerede system.
Ja, Facebooks Libra er jo en introduktion, som du siger, af en ny kryptovaluta. Nok inspireret af kryptovalutaen Bitcoin, som mange kender. Så i juni 2019, der gik Mark Zuckerberg ud med en såkaldt white paper, som ligesom skulle beskrive lidt omkring tankerne omkring et globalt betalingssystem. Og jeg tror, det er vigtigt i forståelsen af det her Libra, at forstå, at lidt ligesom Bitcoin både er en såkaldt valuta og et betalingssystem samtidig, så er tanken omkring Libra det samme, at det både er ligesom en form for valuta, men det er også en form for settlement-system globalt, som kan flytte penge fra A til B.
Taktopia. Libra er stadig ikke blevet til virkelighed, men for nylig der skiftede den navn til Diem. Og nu ser det ud som, at Facebook og firmaet 26 partnere er kommet noget tættere på at få en lancering af den her kryptovaluta i 2021. Og deres Diem, den kommer til at læne sig op af den amerikanske dollar som sikkerhed. Så på den måde vil den adskille sig fra Bitcoin og den her kurs, der drøner op og ned hele tiden.
I think kind of Mark Zuckerberg and the initiative that started under the name Libra has received a lot of criticism and was confronted with a lot of problems, both from governments as well as from industry. Kind of the first initial reaction by the US Congress was not very positive, and they learned from that. And in order to restart, so the core idea is still the same, they keep this intention alive. But to restart it, they, for in my eyes, marketing reasons, renamed it to illustrate also from the name that they kind of have incorporated the lessons learned in this new thing they call Diem now, to please different regulators in important markets around the world. This time it is indeed ledger-based, but of course it's a permissioned ledger, so it is controlled, if you will, by the issuing, supporting underlying companies, this association, this consortium of which was the Libra consortium. It is a, if you will, a privately issued coin, guaranteed and supported by, first of all, the brand name, and then subsequently by the underlying companies. Pretty sure they have limited their exposure by having made this input, this kind of down payment into the Libra Association, of course. But that is sort of kind of backing the value. But ultimately, value will come from market acceptance. So if, for example, all the Facebook users around the world suddenly with the next upgrade or change of Facebook will see that their Facebook account is turned into a Facebook wallet or Calibra or whatever they will call it, then ultimately at some point you will start using it, saying, okay, we have, between the two of us, we have a small payment to make, and why not kind of pay you in Diem, because yesterday you helped me out when I was short on cash and we had some drinks together. Right, so you will start using it, and from using it and from the general acceptance, especially when you think about the business model of PayPal and the like, if it's becoming comfortable, easy, and very inexpensive to make payments cross-border, then there will certainly be a market and acceptance, and that will also define the value.
Og her i Tektopia vil vi selvfølgelig følge Facebooks valuta i 2021, Men lad os slutte af med et kig i Roman Bechs krystalkugle.
I think the next big thing which will materialize is machine-to-machine payments. The importance of wallets, of universal wallets, will increase and will become visible. So, for example, you know, instead of having your MetaFox mask for entering your crypto wallet, there could be a Chrome browser where you have your a wallet that is automatically paying when you are paying in an online store, or that is kind of exchanging credentials, or is kind of identifying yourself in a transaction. So the role of wallet, and that will be blockchain powered, and machine to machine will become a thing. We see already, I think Mercedes trucks have a pilot where a truck is sort of paying whenever it is refueled out of its wallet with the gas station. You know, it's sort of like an autonomous, seamless process underneath. So we will see more of these kind of payments in the machine-to-machine field. And I'm wondering for a long time what Google and Amazon are going to do, because they are kind of silent in that field. And my initial prediction was that it is not Facebook. I had Facebook not on my radar, but Amazon, with their Amazon coins, that they would come around with Amazon marketplaces around the world. Right. The Amazon is controlling a large amount of compute capacity with their data centers. They already know how to run that. Digitally very, very advanced. They have a large network of established merchants around the world. You may want to buy something from Amazon UK or Amazon.com while you are in Denmark, and now you need to figure out how to pay that. They could use this, as it is programmable money, to also incentivize that merchants, the marketplace participants, to incentivize them for different marketing activities. So for Amazon, it would make a lot of sense to have a global currency, something like Diem, on their platform. So that would be, in my eyes, the next logic step for them to happen, because they're big enough, they have an installed network, they have the compute capacity, and they have, most importantly, they have use cases that would actually benefit from having their own currency in place. That would be my guess. We will see something coming out of Amazon, and we will see more central banks openly endorsing central bank digital currency solutions more than we have seen so far. There's a consultation phase ongoing right now. The ECB is running, the European Central Bank. I'm pretty sure the National Bank also has to do something so that we are not last in this development. And that will also be something we will see in 2021, that we will see more out of central banks regarding crypto fiat money.
Ja, det var altså Roman Bech, der er professor på European Blockchain Center på ITU her i København. I denne her uge har vi også modtaget et podkort fra Ingeniørens podcast Transformator.
Alle taler om det, nogen frygter det, og fagfolk siger, at det vil ændre en hel masse. Men det er som om ingen rigtig ved, hvor udbredt det bliver. Nej, det er ikke corona. Faktisk skal vi slet ikke snakke om den virus i ugens udgave af Transformator. Vi skal tale om et helt andet objekt for konspirationsteoretikerne, nemlig 5G. For nogen kan måske huske, at vi engang fik 3G, og alle sagde, at nu ville vi altså få videotelefoni. Men i stedet blev det til datatransmission og mails på telefonen. Mens det der med at se hinanden på skærmen blev overtaget af FaceTime, Messenger osv. Den historie kender vi. Nu har vi så 5G, og hvad skal vi så gætte på den her gang? Det har vi et bud på, som jo så sikkert bliver afløst af noget helt andet i virkeligheden. Og fra luften skal vi ned under jorden, ned til det hellige danske drikkevand. Når jeg kalder det helligt, ja, så er det fordi vi jo her i landet har et navlefast princip om, at drikkevand, Det skal ikke renses, det skal kunne hives lige op af jorden og ud i hanerne. Men det princip kan vi godt begynde at vinke farvel til, og det er vores egen skyld. Lyt med i Transformator i denne uge.
Du har lyttet til Techtopia, der udkommer hver eneste mandag. Du er velkommen til at skrive med ris og ros til mig på henrik@techtopia.dk. Du kan følge os på Twitter på @techtopia.dk. Du kan også følge os på Instagram, hvor vi hedder Techtopia, sjovt nok. Og så kan du deltage i teknologidiskussionen i vores Facebook-gruppe, der hedder Techtopia Backstage. Techtopia er produceret af mig, Henrik Føns, og Sabrina Andersen og Veronica Wollin. På genhør i næste uge. Techtopia. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Innovation Center Danmark, Messecenter Herning og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. Techtopia.